What up, folks? This is your boy, the Pittsburgh Golf Hack, and you're listening to The Official Podcast. I'm Garen, and you're listening to Season 2, Episode 4, Pinehurst. So we got a bunch to unbundle today, folks. There's a ton of turmoil that's going on with the Saudi League and PGA, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you will hear shortly. We had a spectacular U.S. Open, and Sir Rich and I are going to recap on our trip to Pinehurst here in just a little bit. But first, let's talk about this Saudi League situation. In case you have been living under a rock, the PGA now has an evil stepbrother. There's a new league that's being backed by Saudi Arabian investors, and it's being chaired by Greg Norman. This Saudi-backed league is being called LIV Golf, and it kicked off its official first event a few weeks back in London. Long story short, there's been a pissing match between the PGA and LIV Golf, and the PGA has made an official statement and sent out official letters stating that any current PGA players that decided to play in the LIV event would be banned from competing in the PGA moving forward. In pretty much what almost seemed like an overnight move, over 20 PGA golfers made the move to the Saudi-backed league, those names of which included the likes of Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson, Patrick Reed, Ian Poulter, and the list goes on. Most recently, Brooks Koepka made the jump. So some of the players have reportedly accepted contracts in advance of $200 million. There's been a lot of proverbial punches thrown between PGA players and LIV players. It seems like the majority of those coming from Rory, but the dust has seemed to have settled for now. So here we are today. LIV Golf has had their first event, and I'm going to be the first to admit, I watched a little bit of the tournament, and to me it just felt like something that really didn't matter. Kind of reminded me of the matches that they're having with some of these folks. Just really, I don't know, maybe because it didn't have any history. I can't really explain it, but I just really could have cared less once the golf actually started. Now I'm going to be the first to admit, I was completely locked in at first, but I think that was mostly just to watch the body language of the players and to see how they would react after leaving the tour and all the drama that has ensued, because the PGA commissioner has came out and said that they are officially banned from the PGA. But, you know, again, once the golf started, you know, to me, I was just like, nah, shotgun starts, team scoring, no history, just didn't seem like a real golf tournament to me. So moving on to a real golf tournament, we had one heck of a U.S. Open. On the final day, we had a really impressive lineup with Masters winner Scottie Scheffler. We had Rory, John Rahm, Will Zalatoris, Colin Morikawa. They were all in the mix, and it made for an extremely exciting finish. The Country Club at Brookline, Massachusetts, to say the least, was playing tough. I think my favorite clip that NBC did prior to the first day was they tossed a golf ball into the rough and it completely disappeared. And then there was, I don't even remember what hole number it was, but if you didn't hit the green in the right spot, there was a false front and it would roll not only completely off the green, but the fairways were so slick that it would roll about 50 yards back just because it was such an extremely slick and steep incline in front of the green. And you know, once again, I sat there and I found myself thinking, again, golf is really hard. So, amazingly, this young up-and-comer Matt Fitzpatrick rises to the occasion. We all love a good up-and-coming star. And if you didn't know, the LIV golfers were actually allowed to play in the U.S. Open because it's not a full-blown PGA-sanctioned event. However, I felt that none of them actually gave any effort whatsoever. Phil just seemed like he didn't care whether he didn't make the cut or not. He didn't make the cut, and I personally feel that none of those guys cared. And you know what? If that's the way that they want to treat one of the oldest tournaments in the history of golf, then you know what? Arrivederci, baby. So long, good riddance, have fun, but for me, there's just no substitute for the PGA. So it's time to talk about Pinehurst, folks. I would like to have provided you all with some on-course audio. Unfortunately, if I was to provide that on-course audio, we would have to change the listing of the podcast to explicit because it was not pretty. However, me and Sir Rich are going to walk you through our trip to Pinehurst, so let's get to it. So as I announced in the last episode, Sir Rich and I took a golf trip down to Pinehurst. I'm not sure there's much we actually want to talk about with regards to our awful scores we put up, but we're going to talk about Pinehurst nonetheless, right, Rich?
Absolutely. So if you guys remember, I distinctly remember saying that I didn't want to go down there and play bad golf, and lo and behold, we went down there and played bad golf, Garen.
At least you weren't by yourself this time.
That's true. Yeah, watching everybody else shooting in the 70s and 80s, and there I am suffering. But it is what it is. Glad for the opportunity to talk about it. So let's break down our little trip.
Yeah, it was still a good time. This was with our buddy Jeff, of which actually he's the one that booked the trip for us, and also about 10 other guys that we took with us.
Yep.
We booked, so for those of you, if you've been looking at a trip to Pinehurst and don't really know where to start, our trip was booked through Legacy Golf Packages. So you can go to their website, legacygolfpackages.com. You can see what all the courses that fall under the Legacy group are. I will tell you, they don't include any of the resort courses. So, you know, if you're looking to play Pinehurst number 2 or number 4 or any of those, you're not going to find those on that list. However, there's still some pretty good tracks like Tobacco Road, Southern Pines, Mid Pines, Tallamore, and Pine Needles. Those are all, just to name a few, some of the courses that are in that pack or in the Legacy group.
Right.
Our package included 6 rounds of golf across 4 days and 4 different courses, and that was again for 13 guys. Also included hotel, which, you know, we weren't staying in Lux. We weren't, you know, we weren't staying in a Hilton affiliate or Marriott affiliate, but it was a Comfort Inn, and, you know, for what it was actually very clean and very nice, and, you know,
nice, clean, quiet hotel.
As one of the guys like to put it, it's handy.
Yep. Handy as a pocket on a shirt, as one of the guys would say down there. But, yeah, man, we stayed in the same Comfort Inn the last time when we went to Pinehurst and had a great time. Jeff, being Jeff's right-hand guy, I got the distinction of being able to stay in the end suite, which is nice. It had a living area and then a sleeping area as well. So, but it seems like everybody had, you know, nice, quiet, clean rooms, a place for us to pass out at the end of the day because we were all dead dog tired, after most of our rounds. Some of us more so than others because we made way more swings. So,
hey, the air conditioner worked and the shower worked. That was about what we were looking for. So going back to our package though, so our package, like I said, included the hotel. So get this, folks, again, 4 days of golf, 4 different courses for 13 guys and your hotel. Our package was $541 per person. That's
you can't beat it.
It's really hard to beat that. If you're looking for a budget friendly trip to get you, you know, for your first trip, or, you know, even like I said, you know, these guys have been going down there for quite a while. This was the first year I went with them, but that was a really good bargain. And the courses that we played, so we played Quail Ridge, Seven Lakes, yep, Legacy Golf Links, which is a Jack Nicklaus course, and the Whispering Pines Pines course.
Yes.
So before we get into talking about how terrible we played there, let's talk about the actual courses. So Quail Ridge, day one, I thought it was a very interesting track. You give me your take on what you thought about Quail Ridge. And I'll kind of give you what I thought.
Sure. So I'm kind of in the same camp as you. Interesting layout. The greens were absolutely positive. positively immaculate. Also, like, hardwood floors. They were very fast that day. But it led to some consistency. I drained some putts, even though I came out of Quail Ridge with a 97, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But I did drain some longer putts because the greens were rolling true and they were rolling consistently. It was you had to make some shots that you don't see in mountain golf, that Garrett and I usually play, which is kind of the norm for down there, right? But it was overall, it was beautiful. The greens were great. Fairways were good. I won't say they were burnt, but they were they weren't
they had a few places
tour quality. They weren't tour quality, but they were good. Well, I'll say that.
Yeah, definitely not the best we've seen that week, but when we get on to talking about another one here in a little bit, I think it was still, they weren't the worst fairways we've seen.
No, what was your take on the course?
I thought it was very fair. Out of all the courses that we played, now the green complexes were tough. And like you said, and they had just top dressed. So they had just top dressed that weekend before we got there. So they were still a little sandy, but man, were those greens fiery. They were fast.
Oof, they were.
Probably the fastest we've seen all week, wouldn't you think?
By a fair margin, honestly. They were quick. We've played some pretty upscale, you and I played the old white, and those things were rolling really fast that day, and these were at least as fast.
Yep. I thought they putted, even to be top dressed, thought they putted pretty true. You just have to give Quail Ridge folks a little shout out here. Customer service was top notch. I mean, our 13 guys that were there for the day, we truly felt like that we had all of their attention. You know, they were accommodating us, whatever we wanted, helped fill our coolers with ice.
Took care of us.
Absolutely took care of us. And to be honest with you, in my opinion, probably some of the best food that we had, and very simple menu, but some of the best, like, golf course food we had all week, really, I thought.
Oh, solid. Oh, it was super solid. The whole experience there that day was extremely solid. Great people. Like you said, the pro shop and the grill were just top notch. It wasn't anything, you're not pulling up Magnolia Lane to go into this clubhouse, but it was a really well put together little clubhouse, and they took a lot of pride in their golf course, and it showed. But they were extremely happy to have us there, and they were accommodating. They got us off. We never bothered. Actually, all 4 days, we never bothered another soul on the golf course. We were able to get through our rounds very quickly. Never held anybody up, and we never really ran into anybody. So it was a pleasant experience. They did a great job at getting us off, in the right order, and taking good care of us. They took good care of us all day. That was a long day of golf. We played 36 that day. So we played 18, keeping our own score, and then we scrambled the second half.
Yep. And I had to give another shout out to Quail Ridge. I actually lost my putter cover on the course that day and left them my phone number, and 2 days later they gave me a shout, and sure enough, they had recovered my putter cover, was able to actually get that before we left. So kudos to you, Quail Ridge, for your outstanding customer service. So
yep, if you and I'll say, if you're in the area and you're looking for a value golf course to play, because you can scoop Quail Ridge up on Golf Now at a very affordable, especially for what the course is, for a very affordable price, being down there. And if you don't want to spend, $100-$200 for a round of golf, this is right in that $55 area. And I will tell you, at $55, it is worth every single penny that you're going to spend.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So moving on to day two, which thankfully we did not play 36.
only 18 on that day. But Seven Lakes. Seven Lakes was a very interesting course in which we started off the day by me getting yelled at by Sir Rich because he was running late, and I'll be honest with you, I was in a bad mood. I was hurting in places that I didn't even know could hurt. But Sir Rich was running a little late to the golf course, and without even thinking, I headed onto the range, even though me and him were paired up that day, and didn't realize he was going to not have a golf cart. And down to the range comes Sir Rich storming with a vengeance.
Oh, so you say down to the range as if it's a short walk, just a stroll down the parking lot, Garen. Maybe we should let the people know that I walked damn near a half mile with my bag on my back to come and find you downhill in a pair of golf spikes. But no, really, it's fine. We're good. Nothing. No harm. No foul. Listen, it happens. Jeff is one of my favorite people, and he will tell you right now that he will be late to his own funeral. Jeff just perpetually somehow lateness finds him, even if he tries to be early. But you know what? We got there and we got off, and everything was good.
But you can darn sure bet that he found a cart and got to the range before you did.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Once he hit the ground running, man, I was just left at the car trying to get everything together, and then I realized I didn't have a cart. And a couple of our cohorts offered to throw my bag on the back and I could jump on the back of their cart, and I was so mad at that point I just needed to walk the anger off. So I did, went down, hit a couple balls, and off we went.
Dr. Nate would be proud of you, you know, sticking to your golf fitness plan even when you're on a golf trip.
Absolutely. Got to get that cardio in, Dr. Nate. Kudos to you, buddy. Hopefully, shout out to Dr. Nate, who is just a few weeks post-surgery. Hope you're feeling better, man, and we can't wait to get out with you soon.
Absolutely. So, Seven Lakes was a very interesting course. You walked down to the range, of which, by the way, was only a range in the sense that it was an open field that had some flag sticks in it. That was probably the most pathetic driving range I've ever seen in my life.
It was terrible. And as bad as I was hitting driver that week, which we'll talk about shortly, by the way, the driver has come back, Garen, thank goodness, because I was in DEFCON 1 mode worried about it. But as bad as my driver was that week, I was hitting driver out of that range. Pathetic doesn't even begin to explain what that was. It was literally a cow pasture with some flag sticks jammed into the ground.
Yeah, and they had these quote unquote like turf hitting boxes, which actually had grass growing through the turf.
I
really don't even know why they still have it open. I don't even know how they get balls out of it, because the weeds and stuff were so high in it that, like, I don't even know how they retrieve their golf balls for the range. But
crazy.
But
absolutely crazy.
You know, moving on, they had your typical putting green, but I will say right off the bat, right after coming off of lightning fast Quail Ridge, these greens at Seven Lakes was super slow.
Yeah, and I think there were two. I think A, they were slower, and then B, after coming off what we had putted on the day prior, 36 holes worth of it, they seemed even that much slower, you know?
Yeah.
And, man, it was rough to get the ball to roll true. They weren't the truest greens either. They had some bumps. I had some issues with the fairways, and Jeff will disagree with us. But man, those fairways were burnt.
Yeah. In full disclosure, I think Jeff and some of the, you know, some of the other guys, they have some sentimental attachment to that course, you know, with some family ties to it. But, you know, it was probably the worst fairways we've seen all week. They were very burnt. Had a lot of bare spots in them, and in some places it almost looked like aeration holes that just never grew back.
Now, that said, there was some beautiful views on this course. You know, it being called Seven Lakes, it did stay true to name. There was some very pretty views on the course that we got to see. And, you know, I think it's one of those situations where that course might not have been in the very best shape that it could be and probably is now. But it just at the time we were there wasn't, you know, it wasn't physically in great shape. But I tell you what, some of those views were gorgeous.
Yeah, they were. There were two holes that stuck out in my mind that were very, very pretty. The par three that's coming down the hill as you're coming into the larger of the lakes.
Yeah.
That par three was beautiful, which I don't even... I've tried to block that one out of my memory as to what I did on that hole after it took me four shots to get out of a bunker.
I was going to say, that's the bunker hole, right?
That's the bunker hole. Yep, four strokes to get out of that one.
Man, I felt for you. It was one of the hardest things that I've seen in a long time, because it was one of those situations, and I'll tell you this, folks, Garen and I, for the very first time, did not go head-to-head, claw-to-claw competition. We just enjoyed a round of golf together, and watching Garen struggle to get out of that bunker was hard, because I ended up hitting that green, and I parred the hole, and It was rough. It was rough, man. It was rough. I told you that in the card. It was rough seeing you try to get out of there.
Well, it wouldn't be the last time that happened that week, as I had a couple more blow-ups. But I will tell you this. We got that problem fixed, because I got with my coach Mike, whenever I got home. And cool. We went up and had a lesson, and I blasted about 100 shots out of the bunker until I could finally get one out of the bunker and get it up onto the green. No reason for me to not be able to get out of a greenside bunker now.
Yeah, you just got to open that face and swing it harder than you think you should.
Yep. So, but the other cool thing about that course, if there's one reason to play that course, they have something very unique there that I have never seen on any other golf course. Now, you've seen TPC Sawgrass, you've seen the Island Green, you've seen a lot of courses that try to replicate that.
Yeah, I forgot about this. Yeah. Talk on it, Garen.
This course has an island tee box.
Very cool. Extremely cool.
I'd never seen that before. And, you know, it's really cool. So you're coming out of the par three that's right there on the edge of the lake, and you then proceed across a wooden bridge
almost like a mini causeway kind of situation.
Yeah, and then right in the middle of the causeway, there's a stopping point with a gazebo. You get out of your cart, park it right on the bridge, and the tee box is a little island right in the middle of the lake. Very cool.
Very extremely cool. Probably the coolest course personality piece that we saw all week. If I was a marketing person for Seven Lakes, I would center all my marketing around that. It's just a very, very cool, piece, and I don't think anybody else down there has that going on.
No, absolutely. So moving on to day three, in which we attempted to play another 36, but kind of got stormed out, which we'll talk a little bit about here in just a little bit. But
sure.
Legacy, the Jack Nicklaus course. That, my opinion, was, now that's a golf facility.
I'll paraphrase from the boys from Chasing Scratch and just say,
Yeah.
It was good.
It was, it lived up to its name as being a Nicklaus course. Very cool design. I really like how they incorporated, you know, some of the water with this to where they actually, it was deceiving the way they set up. I think it was number 10. As you start in on the back nine, I think number 10 was that one that kind of hugged the coastline of the fairway.
Yeah. And you had the lake just off to the right. You hit all over just the littlest bit of water, but the water was in play the entire hole.
Yeah. Because if you set up with the tee box, what you didn't realize is they had the tee box basically lined up directly down the coastline instead of aiming you over to the fairway. So by yep. instinct, if you line up by the tee box, you're putting one in the drink.
Yep, easily.
Of which I put two in the drink.
Did you?
I did. I put two in the drink on that on our first 18 that day.
Well, that's one hole that I didn't rope hook on because I rope hooked everything with the driver that week. I actually hit a nice little pretty fade, but faded it just a little too much and hit the hillside, and it kind of came off, and I was in the left rough. So I ended up double bogeying that hole the first time. So still in crappy shape, but that was par for the course, no pun intended.
Yeah, that particular hole with the fairway on the water we were talking about, and then there was another par three where you kind of had to cross, the water kind of came in, but there was a beautiful stone wall in front of the green on this par three, and man, you talk about a picturesque hole. Matter of fact, if you go on my on the Pittsburgh Golf Hack Instagram, you'll see that I had posted a picture of that island green, or kind of a semi-island green, but beautiful par three hole.
Absolutely. The other cool thing about this this course was, so you had some holes that were wide open, and you caught wind off the lake, and you had to kind of fight the wind, and then there were other holes that were nestled back in the pines. So you felt like you felt like it was stadium golf because you were so enclosed. Now the fairways were pretty inviting and wide, and even the rough, and if you got out into the tree line, you had, it being the pines, you could go down, find your ball, punch out, and move on. But it varied itself really well. Like you said, it's a Nicholas design, and it really showed itself.
Yeah, very, very well maintained. Probably the truest running greens that we played all week.
Not the fastest, but very true.
Right. Not the fastest, but very true. You could tell that they probably roll them on the reg. Driving range there was spectacular. The clubhouse and pro shop were amazing. Just
top notch.
Just couldn't say enough courses or enough good things about that course. You definitely got to add that one to your playlist if you're going to go down there and make a trip out of it.
That's a little bit of a hidden gem. Not everybody puts that on their list because there's a lot of, obviously it being Pinehurst, there's a lot of really good courses down there and, you know, it gets kind of covered up by your Pinehurst courses or Tallamore or Mid Pines or Mid South. There's a lot of really like PGA tournament style courses down there that hold their own. This thing's a little bit of a hidden gem, and it stands up head and shoulders with all of those top notch courses without having to pay quite as much money.
Yeah. So before we move off of Legacy, I got to tell this story, and you didn't get to witness it, which is even, I guess better, but you all were in the front of us on when we played our second round on the second half of the day, and we were scrambling again, but you were in the group in front of us. We had played through the first nine, was making the turn. We'd played through 10. You all were on 11. We were going into 11. And all of a sudden, it was just like, it was kind of eerie, but it was like all of us.
It was super eerie.
Just everything got black. And it was just like this big black cloud rolled over the ridge. And the trees literally just like folded over like hurricane force winds.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. So 11 is a par three coming in off the lake, and watching this come over the ridge off this over the water, it was scary.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that they never set off the alarms, but there was never any lightning, so
so I don't think I told you this, but one of the guys in our group, Robbie, called the clubhouse to see if they had sounded the horn, and we just didn't hear it. And they said, no, we haven't sounded the horn, but now that we know you're out on the course, we're sending a ranger to get you right now. Get to the clubhouse immediately.
Wow. No, you didn't tell me. I didn't know that. It was pretty scary. And so, I mean, there's literally like pine cones and everything flying through the air. I mean, you're talking probably 40 mile per hour winds. Mm-hmm. And you all had just teed off, and Jeffrey was in our group, and we were sitting there, and the gentleman that was with me, Tony, he's a little bit of a, you know, middle-aged gentleman, and you know, Jeff's just sitting there, well, I'm looking at the radar, and it says it, you know, it's going to be here in about 2 hours, and Tony's like, brother, it ain't coming in 2 hours, it's here.
It's already, it's on top of us, bro.
Yeah, it is on top of us, and then he got in the cart, and he's like, we're going back to the clubhouse. And now I'll have to mind you, we were scrambling, and me and Jeff, I don't know what happened the first 18 of the day, but something happened on the second 18, and I kicked it in high gear. You actually witnessed on the one par three that I stuck one about a foot from the pin and birdied the hole on my own. That was all my shots on that hole. I was absolutely on fire. I'll have to admit to you, I didn't want to go in because...
Oh, of course.
I was absolutely playing out of my mind. And anyways, Tony looks at me and he gets back in the cart and he's expecting me, I guess, to like, you know, hit the gas. And he was like, what are you waiting for? Let's go. And I'm like, I don't know, Tony. We might be okay. And he just looked at me. He's like, Garen, don't be stupid, man. Let's get our hind ends back to the clubhouse. And about that time, the wind picked up even more. And I said, all right, Jeff, we're out. We hightailed it out of there. And this is the part that I don't think that I really told you much about. So me and Tony are coming back to the clubhouse. And to get back to the clubhouse, you had to go back through number 10's fairway and cross this about 150-yard wooden bridge across a lake to get back to the clubhouse. And I had bought this Walter Hagen straw hat.
No, you told me this.
So I had bought this Walter Hagen, like Greg Norman style straw hat because, you know, you're playing in southern heat. I wanted something to protect the old noggin because the Pittsburgh golf hack don't have much hair to cover up there. So we're going to cross the middle of this bridge. And mind you, there's 40-50 mile an hour winds going through here. And all of a sudden, a gust of wind takes my straw hat and my sunglasses, rips it off my head, and it ripped it off my head so fast, Tony didn't even know it had happened. And I slam on the brakes of the golf cart in the middle of the bridge, and he's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, the wind just took my hat and my sunglasses. And he's like, man, you just got to let that go. You just got to let that go. I was like, I'm not just letting it go. I just got that hat. So
into the water.
Into the water. So I'm able to climb over the edge of the bridge. I was able to immediately get my sunglasses, which of course are some cheapos from Walmart. If they'd been, you know, a pair of Oakleys, I'm sure they would have sunk to the bottom of the lake. But I got my $5 Walmart sunglasses, and I couldn't get to my hat. So I'm like, Tony, give me my driver. And he's like, come on, man, we gotta go. And I was like, just give me my driver. So he gave me my driver, and I'm trying to reach it, and I couldn't reach it. So I climbed back up onto the bridge. He's like, are you done? I said, nope. He's like, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to climb up on this rail, and you're going to hold my ankles.
Oh, my God. I would have given anything to see this.
So I proceed to shimmy out onto the bridge with nothing but my ankles actually being on the wood, and I am hanging over the bridge with my driver. I finally get the hat. I get it in, get it pulled in. And Tony's like, thank God, let's go. So we go running back in the clubhouse. And there was like a whole gaggle of men on the back porch. And I was like, I guess you all just witnessed that spectacle out there. They're like, no, what are you talking about? I was like, you didn't see me like fishing my hat out of the lake, you know, with my driver. They're like, no, we didn't see nothing. I was like, okay, well, there was no witnesses to this event.
Oh, thank God. See, you and Tony could have taken that to your grave, man.
It was pretty scary, but it was definitely a part of the trip that I will never forget. So thank you, Tony, for you know, making sure I did not fall in the lake in the middle of a hurricane.
appreciate you, Tony. Thanks, buddy.
So the next course was Whispering Pines. It was the last course we played for the week. Not a terrible course, not a great course, but I thought that there were a lot of good, holes that kind of stood out to me. A couple par threes. I really liked the one, par three you had to hit over the lake. And then there was, I think it was a par five that had a, a pond or a stream or something that was in front of it you had to lay up over. I thought those were some pretty, you had a lot of strategy holes.
You did. Yeah, that was a shot maker's course. Hitting the ball as bad as I did all week, I will say that I did not enjoy myself there. Highest score of the week there, and to say that I limped it in on the back nine is a vast understatement. The only saving grace was the company that I got to play with. I rode with our elder statesman Scotty, who is just about the most fun human being on the face of the planet to be able to play golf with. Scotty says golf is the most fun that you can have with your clothes on, and you know what, he's pretty, right, man.
He's pretty accurate on that. Yeah,
but the company saved it for me. I got to play with Scotty, and I got to play with a friend of ours from Parkersburg. Shout out to Kyle, and he's become a buddy pretty quick. And I had a terrible day of golf, but a great group of company, so the day of golf wasn't so bad.
Yeah, definitely helps when you're having those days. I had a terrible day on that course as well, and it's funny because it started out amazing. Mm-hmm. I literally think after three holes I was either one under or even one of the two, I can't remember, but I played with Jeff's Uncle Keith, and I remember, and he is almost like he jinxed me, because I remember after that third hole he looked at me and he said, "How have you shot so high this week?" He's like, I don't see it. And I said, "No, just wait. It'll come.
It'll come. Don't worry."
And I think it was on the, I think it was on the 17th hole was where I had another sand blow up. I was in the fairway bunker.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember you telling me about it.
Yeah, it took me two to get out of that one. And then I ended up in the greenside bunker. I hit two shots out of the bunker, or two shots in the bunker, and on the third shot, I sculled it across the green about 150 yards, and then struggled to get back. I think I put up an 11 on that hole.
So the par three that you sculled across the green. Well, no, there was a par three that took you a couple shots to get out, because I remember us talking about it after the round. I hit what I thought, and Kyle's a low single handicap. He's a good golfer. He hits what he thinks is an absolute laser at the flagstick, and he comes up short. And I didn't ask him what club he hit. I didn't really matter to me. And I step up, and you know, I shoot the distance, and you know, try to account for the wind. And Kyle says right before I make my swing, "Hey man, there's wind up there, and it's gonna knock whatever you hit down." And I was like, "There's no way there's wind that far up. I'm just gonna try and knock down a little 8-iron, keep it as low as possible." And I hit what I thought, had the wind not caught this, Garen, it may have been in the cup. You couldn't have lined it up any straighter than what I hit it at that flagstick, and it still came up short. And plugged in the bunker, took me two to get out. I ended up double bogeying the hole.
Yeah, there was a lot of that there. And me and you tied that day.
Yep.
I think that was both of our highest scores for the week. And
yes.
It was a painful one. But I'm still glad we did it. We're glad we can put it behind us. But we can't talk about Pinehurst anymore, though, Rich, without talking about the food.
Oh, because we had a lot of it, right?
We did.
You had mentioned, so we'll start where we start, right?
Deuce Grill.
So the guys from Chasing Scratch hyped this up, and I was really excited to have it. So Jeff and I go on Wednesday evening, and we walk around the complex, and like I said, we took our wedges and our putters. A very, very cool complex, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But we ended up having dinner there, and I had the Philly, and we sat out on the patio. So check this out, folks. The Deuce Grill overlooks the 18th green of Pinehurst number 2. So you get to watch all of these people coming in, and it is customary that if you hit a great shot, you get a golf clap just like you're at a PGA Tour event. And if you hit a bad shot, people are going to give you all the crap that they possibly can. And it is an amazing, amazing atmosphere. Everybody's out there with some beverages and some cigars, having this amazing food. Just a great time all together. I will say this, my Philly was really good. Don't get it twisted. But the ambiance and environment added to and made that Philly that much better. It was an extremely cool experience to sit there on the 18th and watch some really good shots and watch some really bad shots. And everybody who came in on 18 was a really good sport, and we had a really good time with it. So that started the week for us, or at least for me. And then we moved through. I'll let you cover a little bit here, buddy.
Yeah, and I can account for the Deuce Grill. I didn't get to eat there. But when we went back to the resort later that week just to kind of hang out on the grounds, I sat back there in one of those nice white rocking chairs that was back there and just kind of took it in. And, I mean, you got spectators not only eating there, but like I said, there's like chairs and rocking chairs all out there that you just go up to the resort and grab yourself a seat and sit there and watch people. You don't have to be eating at the grill to watch the golfers come in, which is just amazing to me.
Yep, very awesome. It goes without saying, but kudos to Pinehurst's number 2 complex. You and Jeff gave me a bunch of crap because I was so enamored with it. To me, if I went out, I got hit by a bus today, and I woke up in heaven, that's where I'd wake up.
Yeah, I would agree. It is a golfer's paradise. But
absolutely.
The first night that we were there all together, though. We hit up a place. We actually hit this place up twice during the week, but it's a fan favorite with the group that we go with. But it's called Hickory Tavern.
It's amazing.
Nothing special about this place. Just straightforward good food. They've got good burgers. They've got good steaks. Some of the guys liked the peel and eat shrimp that they had there. Just really,
well, they have fresh oysters as well. That's another thing. The menu is crazy robust. You can get everything from a really great aged ribeye all the way to, you know, chicken tendies if you want to go super simple.
Yeah. And the ambiance is cool. It's definitely a golfer's place. They've got TVs galore inside with this huge, huge, high-top table that spans the whole length of the restaurant. They got private rooms, so if you get a large group, you can get a private room. But they also have what we really liked the most was they have a patio outside that actually has TVs, and they will wait on you out there, which was great because a lot of our guys, including yourself, Sir Rich, like to light up a few stogies in the evening and sit around and chew the fat. So
probably my favorite part of the trip that we weren't swinging golf clubs was being able to sit out and tell stories and BS with that awesome group of guys and have the Cadillac of cigars. Kudos to you, Drew Estate, and your Liga Privada number 9. You're right. That's the fan favorite for all of us guys.
Yeah, it was basically anybody can find, you know, something to eat at that place. Not overly expensive. I thought it was very reasonable for, you know, basically everything on the menu. There was nothing I found that was overpriced, and just good time. They've even got, you know, if it's rainy outside, they got a good golden tea machine inside to keep you busy. So
absolutely. It's cool. Again, I know that We've said this a bunch already, but if you're down there and you're looking for somewhere, you know, off the beaten path, not an Outback Steakhouse or an Olive Garden or a chain restaurant, there's a couple places that we had that we really, really would suggest that you go and you check out, and Hickory Tavern is definitely one of them.
Yep, it was a pretty good one. How about the one that we went to down in the village of Pinehurst, which was kind of a hidden gem that Nobody, it wasn't even really on the radar for anywhere, but ended up being a really, really cool hidden gem, and that is Dugan's Pub.
Dugan's Pub, man. So you would never, you'd never know. I'm sure the locals will tell you that it's great because it was full of you had a couple resort people, which I'm sure the resort, because it's right there.
Next to the Holly Inn, was that
Yeah, right next to the Holly Inn, which is where a lot of the resort stayers stay. And it was locals, and then people that were very obviously staying on the resort. And this was a pub that looked like, you know, early American. It had been there forever and a day. It was an extremely old building. All of the charm, all of the, like, the cool artwork and the stuff that they had on the walls and the way that the place was built, very quaint. And then the food was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the fish and chips, and the fish and chips were absolute fire.
As did I. Very old lightly lunch. Breaded, not too heavy, just excellent.
When we go back, I'm going to make that a stop.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned it being close to the resort, and, you know, the Village of Pinehurst I thought was really cool. You get that historic Southern colonial type, you know, village vibe from there. Just really cool. You can tell there's a lot of history there, but you're right there in the throes of the resort. So let's talk a little bit about the resort itself. So the golf shop, just the history in the halls, and that 18-hole putting green thistle do. Was that not amazing?
Amazing. So check this out. We show up on the grounds, and I had already gotten a chance to do it, and I alluded to it before. But so you get on the grounds, and you have your putter in hand, and the cool thing is you're right there next to the Cradle, which is the par 3 course for the Pinehurst Resort. Very, very famous. Very, like, as long as you're there to get on, you can book same day, but it's always completely and utterly booked, but it's a blast. But Thistle Dew is right there at the starter shack for the Cradle. And the tradition, what everybody does is everybody kicks off their shoes. Everybody's barefoot. You go grab yourself a beverage. There's a beverage cart. There's a couple cart girls hanging out around that area. You grab yourself a beverage. You take a couple balls, and you go play mini golf. And it's this gigantic, probably, would you say it's near the size of a football field, Garen? This putting green.
Probably not that big, but I'd say it's, if I recall correctly, I think Pinehurst says it's an acre.
I mean, that's a huge, huge putting. It's gigantic. Big. To be like there, so the upper part of it is a true putting green for if you're trying to get ready and to go on to number two and to kind of test the greens out, there's an actual flat putting green. But the other half of it is made for Thistle Dew. Thistle Dew is a true putt-putt course. You know, you've got some crazy undulations, some elevation changes. It's just an absolute blast. And get this, you can literally pull up, walk in, play Thistle Dew.
Completely free.
It is
there for the taking. For you can absolutely pay not a dime. Go park in the public parking at Pinehurst and go play Thistle Dew. One of the coolest things ever.
Absolutely. Absolute blast.
And get this. I don't know if you knew this or not, Rich, but supposedly, based on the facts that I have read, supposedly Thistle Dew was one of the first mini golf courses in America.
That's very cool. Didn't know that. That's very cool.
Yep. Supposedly that was one of the first ones. A lot of history on that you can read up on. I don't have it pulled up to share with you, but very, very cool. So
yeah, dude, I'll definitely do my reading on that. That's a very cool fact.
Yeah, the Cradle, as you said, you know, a very unique par 3 that's there. Just watching people play that was also cool. Matter of fact, they've got a whole row along the edge there of Adirondack chairs where you can just sit and watch people play the Cradle. It's really cool.
By the way, I just want to point out that this is what kind of facility that we're at.
I know where you're going here.
I mean, I still can't get over this. So I rode with Garen, and my bag was in my car, so I didn't have my putter with me that evening. And Garen wanted to play Thistledew, and I was like, man, I'm gonna go see if they have just a piece of crap putter I can use for a little while. And I go down to the starter shack at the Cradle, and I say, you know, hey, I my buddy's got his putter. I forgot mine because I rode with him. Explain it to the guy, and the guy laughs, and he goes, I got you, buddy. Just give me a credit card. And I said, absolutely, no problem. So I hand the guy my credit card, and he rummages around. He said, you're lefty or righty? And I said, I'm a lefty. And he rummages around, and he hands me a putter, and I didn't really look at it at first. And then I look down and realize that I'm holding a Scotty Cameron Phantom X.
Yeah, Scotty Cameron Phantom X for a loner putter.
A mini golf course.
A mini golf loner putter. But yeah, it was it's something else. The halls of the actual golf shop there are just lined with history. I mean, they've got all the pictures of Payne Stewart from that classic U.S. Open.
Tiger, all the greats. Yeah. I mean, it is just, if you're a golf nerd, if you're a history nerd, not even a golf nerd, if you're a history nerd, the place is just, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I haven't talked about this. I have been to the USGA Museum in New Jersey, which, maybe we'll talk about that on another episode, but it's kind of like a miniature USGA museum right there in the pro shop there at Pinehurst. It's just so much history. Bags, relics, artifacts, just a lot of really cool stuff there.
Absolutely. It's as I said, Jeff and Garen will very much confirm that I would not shut up about Pinehurst. I am unabashedly, unapologetically in love with that place, and I don't care who knows.
I don't care who knows. I'm in love with Pinehurst.
I was hoping you'd get that.
Well, I was going to talk about the golf on here. I don't think we need to talk about the golf. You know, it was what it was. It was one of the worst golfing experiences of my life, but one of the greatest golf experiences of my life.
Yep. I'll say this. My scores do not reflect the amount of fun that I had.
No, me either. It was frustrating, but a lot of memories, a lot of cool things there, and I highly recommend. So the, first lesson learned that I will share with the folks on, if you're looking to book for a trip to Pinehurst, don't book a golf trip when there's going to be a heat wave hitting where it's 97 degrees every day. That was miserable.
It was very hot. Now I will tell you this, Gary, and I don't think I told you this down there, but the first year that we went to Pinehurst, it was hotter. Now it was hot. Don't get me wrong. It was very hot. And I was, 100 pounds heavier back then. So it was miserable, at that point, but, I'll confirm, man, it was a very hot week. A lot of hydration needed, a lot of electrolyte replacement needed. May is dicey for Pinehurst, 'cause it can get really hot really fast.
Yeah, and mind you, we had 7:30 and 8 o'clock tee times.
Mm-hmm. We were off the course as it got its hottest,
and it was still
with
hot.
The days that we played 18, and it was still blazing. So yeah. I'll tell you, if you're gonna do that and you're planning a multi-day golf course, a multi-day golf trip, just be sure that you get yourself plenty of Gatorade and you get yourself plenty of sleep, because if you don't, after day one, you're gonna be miserable, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and the second lesson I learned is there's a reason they give free replays in May.
Yeah.
If you're going in May, probably not a good time to try to play 36 holes. It's
rough.
There's a reason they give free replays in May. You're going in April, weather's a little more favorable. I'd say go for those free replays. But, you know, that's one of the ways we got our trip down so cheap, and that's how we got so many rounds. But it was that second 18 on those 2 days is pretty rough.
It can get rough. I've learned a little bit to kind of manage it, because I've been doing this for a couple more years than Garen has. And the places that we go are usually down south, and it's usually hot. You get acclimated, and you kind of learn ways to beat the heat. But man, he's right. It is. Saturday before it started raining. It was miserably hot. So prepare yourself for heat. If you like heat, then May is the month for you down in Pinehurst.
Yeah, which is going to lead me to my third lesson learned. Me personally, I don't enjoy playing 36 holes of golf. I kind of felt like that was going to be the outcome before I even went. And I'm just going to be straightforward and honest. Unapologetically, I don't enjoy playing 36 holes of golf.
Well, I will be, this will probably not go over, as popular as, loving it, but I am 110,000% in the same camp with you.
Yeah, and it's not even an agility and ability to do it. It's just not enjoyable. Now, you know, you want to play 18 holes and then, you know, go hang out by the pool for the afternoon and then go back later in the evening and play 9 holes at the Cradle. I'd be down for that.
Absolutely.
But I just, you know, at the end of the day, we weren't playing our own scores. It didn't really account for anything. I mean, don't get me wrong, we had fun, but when you're galled at the end of the day from playing 36 holes of golf, it's just not that enjoyable.
So I'm gonna give everyone out there in Radio Land a little bit of advice, and it usually works. Gold Bond medicated powder is your friend, and it always will be.
Yeah, that was the only saving grace, was the medicated Gold Bond actually took the pain away at least. So, yep. You know, the big question for me is, you know, would I do it again? Pinehurst, absolutely. The 36 holes of golf every day, or at least for 2 of the days, I don't know. I'm definitely looking forward to my next trip down there, but 36 holes may just not be the way old dad here can fly.
I think your next trip down there won't be as big of a deal.
No, probably not. But one more thing to talk about with Pinehurst is we have to give a big shout out to Golf Pride. I had a connection through work, and without kind of letting the cat out of the bag on who I work for and what I do, we have a little bit of an affiliation with Golf Pride. So I was able to get Sir Rich and I in for a tour of the Golf Pride facility, and it did not disappoint.
No, not at all. So it was, first of all, shout out to the folks there. Couldn't ask for nicer treatment. They really, really kind of took us behind the curtain, showed us how the sausage is made. We got to see some really, really cutting edge stuff. And let me tell you, this facility is the epitome of where I want to work.
Yeah, if you're into the whole new vibe, new workspace type area, this place, the hallways, now this is the office center part, the hallways is an 18 hole putting course. There's literally just putting cups in the middle of the hallway.
I've been meaning to ask you, do you think they're going to call me back on that application I left on the desk? Or seriously, guys, it was amazing. I was completely blown away. It was kind of an afterthought. I didn't want Garen to go alone, and I was like, yeah, man, I'll tag along, absolutely. And I'm so glad I went. It was a super experience to get to see, especially I'm a golf Pride grip player anyway. I've always kind of sworn by Golf Pride. And to kind of see what's coming down the pike for them. By the way, they've got some really cool stuff in the works with some of the manufacturers. You guys are going to be blown away by it. So, but it was a really, really cool experience, and I appreciate getting to tag along.
Yeah, the manufacturing process might have been the coolest thing, which, you know, if you're in the general mm-hmm. public, you don't get that. So very, very fortunate that we were able to go back there and see that. But, you know, we were able to go back and see these presses that make the grips, and they actually have a state-of-the-art mold-making
yep.
piece of equipment back there that they're actually able to make a mold for a prototype the same day. Just a very cool piece of machinery. Mm-hmm. And we actually got to see a Titleist mold for a new grip design that hasn't even hit the market yet. That was
very cool.
That was probably the coolest part of the whole shop, or the whole, you know, the whole tour. We didn't get to see the retail shop and the fitting center, which was a little bit of a bummer, but they were under construction. But, you know, to wrap up, you know, everything on the Golf Pride facility, though, they've got a lot of really cool things coming down the pipe there. They've got a new state-of-the-art retail customer experience center where mm-hmm. you're going to be able to go in and interact with grips like you've never had before you ever get down the purchasing pike with them. You're going to be able to try grips out. You're going to be able to get fitted for grips just like you would a golf club, which is
it's
amazing.
It out of this world, completely out of this world. And they were kind of giving us, you know, what they've traditionally done is they're right across the street from number 8.
I think it's number 8.
So they're right across the street from Pinehurst number 8's driving range. So they can literally make a grip, slap it on a club, and traditionally they've gone across the street and tested it out. Well, now they're going to have a facility in-house to where theoretically in the next few years I can go in, tell them specs and performance that I want for my grip, they can make it, I can test it and have it made as an OEM manufacturer, and even possibly as a retail consumer, because their retail business is one of the biggest things that they're going on now.
Yeah, I don't know that they're, you know, it's not consumer grade, but definitely, like, if you're a Callaway, a Titleist, or whatever, mm-hmm. you can come in with an idea, go grab yourself some lunch, hang out for the day, and then by the time evening comes around, there's a high possibility you could be holding your prototype grip in your hand.
Absolutely. Just very cool.
Yeah, cutting edge stuff there. So, but, you know, again, kudos and thank you to Tiffany at Golf Pride for hooking us up with that. And she did not leave us disappointed. She let us go out of there with a handful of swag, which was really, really cool. And
yeah, thanks, Tiffany.
Probably one of the coolest parts of the trip. But nevertheless, Rich, what would you change about the trip?
Aside from the temperature?
Yep.
My golf scores.
Amen and amen. Yep, we will hopefully play better than the next time down there. But, you know, it is a hot weather thing, man. I'll tell you what, I went out and played day before yesterday. It was 95 degrees here in Pittsburgh. Played like doggy do. Literally a week before that, played in Nag's Head. It was a nice 75 degrees. Shot an 83. So it's like, maybe I just don't play good in hot weather.
Very, very possible, man. So I went out on Sunday and I trekked my way to Ashland to play Diamond Links and shot an 85. But it was nice weather. It was about 82, 83 degrees, nice and breezy, low humidity, and played well. So yep.
Could be something.
I've actually put some the last two rounds that I've put up have been numbers, 81 and 85. I'll take that. If I can live in that area for the rest of the summer, I'll be happy. But I do have got a tournament coming up at the end of July, trying to get tuned up for that, and just enjoying my summer of golf, man.
All right, man. Well, it sounds good, and we will catch everybody on the flip side there. So.
So that pretty much wraps us up on Pinehurst, folks. I hope you enjoyed our discussion about Pinehurst and telling you a little bit about our trip. Hopefully you took a few pointers away from that if you're looking to set up your own trip to Pinehurst. I highly, highly recommend it for any golfer, regardless if you're going to go down there and play any of the resort courses or not. Just to be down there in Pinehurst, the mecca of all golf places, I think you would really be remiss if you don't go down and at least check out the facilities and the grounds down there. Maybe even play 18 holes of putt-putt golf on Thistledew. Just an amazing experience, I think, that you would not regret. So with all that being said, if you ever have any questions or you're looking to set your own trip up, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. It's at PGHGolfHack. And with all that being said, folks, until the next time, you all get out and hit them straight and keep on hacking. Thanks for tuning in today, folks. If you like the Pittsburgh Golf Hack Podcast, make sure that you follow and subscribe. That way you'll be in the know anytime any episodes are released. You can also follow the Pittsburgh Golf Hack on Facebook and under the YouTube channel under the Pittsburgh Golf Hack name. You can also follow on Instagram and Twitter at PGH Golf Hack. Credits for the show and any other shenanigans you want to know about this podcast are in the show notes. And make sure that you tune in for the next episode. I got more stuff coming your way soon.